Blog Talk Radio.
Empowered
host on the Marketing Pulpit International. You can listen to us from Mondays through Saturdays, I believe. I believe we have a show on Saturday. So don't forget to tune in right here. Some of us are terrestrial. That would be Robert Gatewood on Friday. But most of us are internet-based, and certainly give us a listen. It's well worth it. So we were talking about small businesses, how they're going to be negatively impacted last week by this administration. Because if you are, you know, say you have your business organized correctly. By organized correctly, I mean you have the proper liabilities and you have the proper insurance. And you have it structured as a subchapter S or subchapter C. Typically, those structures, IRS structures, Internal Revenue Service, enable you, you know, someone from coming along and piercing the corporate veil, as we say in legalese, which means that they can't attach any of your personal assets. God forbid you were found liable, you know, for slip and fall, product defect, or a service failure. Now, if you have the flip side of that, what I wanted to get into is the taxes. Now, the tax cut that is being proposed by the current administration will positively, obviously, impact large businesses. You know, businesses with over 100 employees, which are very few. There's not a lot of business. I mean, there's a lot, but relatively speaking. I mean, there's more small business, mom-and-pop type operations, you know, one-man shows, than there are, you know, businesses employing 100 or more, 100-plus workers. So those businesses will be positively impacted by the current administration's proposal to reduce or to cut taxes. He wants to cut them from 35% to 15%. Don't quite know how that's going to work mathematically, considering that you want to increase in military expenditures or the military budget, which there was an expose that went under the radar less than 3 months ago about an audit that a deputy secretary in the Pentagon tried to bury, which showed tremendous waste, how the services were squandering. The Pentagon itself was squandering monies allotted to it. You know, its budget. Its budget is tremendous, 57% of the GDP. So what the Republicans have tried to do and told us basically, don't believe your lying eyes, is to... And everybody goes along with it because no one takes the time to critically analyze information that's coming about from the administration, which is why the Fourth Estate, rightly so, and I say rightly so, is being attacked because they conspired to elect this administration. I mean, with their uncritical, you know, just a race to the bottom in covering the hyperbole, the outrageous, the next outrage than the other. And in their race for ratings and obviously a positive impact on the bottom line, they covered this guy incessantly. As a direct consequence, we now have the worst administration we've ever had in this country. And you have an entrenched a segment of the country's populace, you know, the administration's supporters who are unapologetic in their support. Every lie that comes out of the guy's mouth or his administration representatives, his representatives and, you know, even the Republican Party, you know, swallow hook, line, and sinker is absolutely outrageous. It really is. And there's no other way to parse it. But what we're saying is that small businesses, which are being taxed at the individual rate, are going to be negatively impacted because, you know, if you think about cutting the social safety net, which is, you know, a mere, but, you know, even though some of the costs they claim are runaway, well, if they're runaway, they're only runaway because they raided the Social Security Administration Trust. And so those costs are going to continue to rise because it is, to a degree, you know, one of the, I don't know who it was. I don't want to begin to, you know, because all of them are, you know, peas in a pod. So, you know, you name one, you name them all. But, you know, one of the representatives said that it's a Ponzi scheme. And it essentially would be a Ponzi scheme if there were not, if it continues to be mismanaged, if it continues to be raided by the executive branch to pay down, you know, its next, you know, fiasco. And by that I mean the Social Security trust. So the point that I'm trying to make is that you know, in totality, if you look at the military budget, it's much larger than any other component of the national, of you know, the gross national product, certainly of our budget overall. And to, you know, basically lie to the American people and suggest that the budget is you know, we have these deficits because of out of control social safety net spending is basically absurd. It's not true. It's a brazen lie. And the only reason that the costs are not coming down is because, save for Medicare, and in some cases Medicare, Medicaid, the programs are not being managed in a manner. There's very little fraud, but what fraud there is, there's much more fraud in the military budget. But what fraud there is being, you know, it's being used to extrapolate how mismanaged the programs are when they're really not mismanaged, except to the degree that the federal government uses the surpluses in these programs to pay down its debt. It's absolutely, and everybody knows this. This is why when you get these talking heads on the radio or the television, you know, lying about the social safety net is astounding. And then you have people that are basically delusional, you know, or ill-informed. Let me put it that way. You know, let me be kind about it, because, you know, in the wake of this, you know, men's conference that I just came from, you know, people are basically, you know, they lack the ability to critically think. So, you know, they are adopting, you know, an American ethos, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstrap. Nobody ever gave me anything. I've worked for everything I ever had. Nobody ever gave me a hand, which is basically, you know, bumpkins. Everyone has had help, people. Everyone, if you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 215-383-3872. Again, that number is 215-383-3872, and you're tuned into the Marketing Pulpit. New York edition with yours truly, Dennis D. Shipping on the mic. And it's 39 degrees and cloudy here in Brooklyn. I don't know what's going on with the weather, but maybe that is indicative of how we feel, cloudy and certainly overcast. But the fact of the matter is that everyone has at some point in their life had a health care. Now, you may not have had it from the government directly per se, but you've had it in the form of other, you know, not necessarily free lunch, but reduced lunch, depending on where you went to school at. If you were born with a silver spoon in your mouth, obviously, you didn't benefit from that type of assistance. But if you grew up like me and, you know, the vast majority of Americans in this country, you know, you did receive some sort of subsidy to eat lunch in school. That's a helping hand, people. I mean, you know, we like to delude ourselves into believing that, you know, we're self-made men or women, and or both, and that you work your way out of poverty. The only thing you can work your way into is in the casket. I mean, if you don't get access, we talk about access all the time on this program, on the Marketing Pulpit, because it's absolutely critical. And even black folks, you would think that we would know better, but we don't. Because like one of the presenters said at this conference, you know, we have a crawfish mentality. We really do. And it's shameful. And we talk about it, and everybody's, we shouldn't talk about that. We shouldn't air our laundry in public. But it's absolutely true. We're the only ethnic group in this country that wants to have a quote unquote, I have my own opinion. You know, just like the men that came out and voted, black men that voted against their own interests, you know, because they're sexist and misogynist and voted against Hillary Clinton for this clown that we now have in office. Lord forgive me for saying that because I did not mean to mention a person's name, and I didn't. Thank goodness that I didn't mention a person's name. But, and then I, you know, I heard a guy, like I was telling you in a show a couple of weeks ago, heard a guy in the barbershop the other day. It was astounding. I literally, I wanted to rip my hair out. It wouldn't have been anything for the barber to cut because I couldn't believe that, he's going to do the right thing for the country. I don't believe all that stuff. And this Russia, you know, guy was utterly ill-equipped. You know, first of all, you know, I already turned off from the gentleman. You know, when he said that he was in the Air Force, he didn't remember what kind of clearance he had. There's only three basic clearances that you can have if you're in the military: confidential, secret, and top secret. And if you have anything below a secret a clearance, you can't work 99.9% of the jobs in the military. You know, the only thing that qualifies you to do is be a cook. So, for him not to remember that he had at least talking about a basic. I had a basic clearance. What is a basic clearance, man? Do you know? So that automatically told me that the guy was ill-informed. Then when he's spouting all this ridiculous foolishness that looked like it came from Fox News Channel's talking points that, you know, I just turned off from the guy. It was really astounding and gives an illustration of how some persons, you know, the point that I'm trying to make is that there are certain ethnicities in this country, whether secular or spiritual, you know, like the Jewish community, that speaks with one voice. That's a fact. You know, they send their children to either law school or medical school, which is why in the legal profession in this country, you know, there's an abundance of Jewish lawyers. Why? Because, you know, if you know the law, you typically can't control the law. That's a fact. What are we doing in the African-American community? We sit up and hem and haw and talk about all opinions that we want to have, and, you know, collectively we don't do anything. You know, you have a segment that is wealthy, that would be, or middle class. Let's just talk about the middle class, the segment of which I am a grudging member, you know, which comprises, you know, persons, you know, making anywhere from $50 to $1 million a year. Then you have that, you know, that unique segment of society that's above that, you know, what we call the upper middle class, or the wealthy, and, you know, comprised primarily of entertainers, athletes, and that sort. And I'm not saying that those people don't give back. I'm sure Oprah Winfrey gives a tremendous amount in philanthropy. Jay-Z and a great many of these athletes, very conscious, and they do give a lot. And they do it very quietly. But what I'm saying is that for the most part, and, you know, a lot of them, you know, LeBron James, all these young cats that are coming out, you know, they're barely in their 30s. You know, they're very conscious. Let's take a break and let's finish talking about this order, because this is a very important point that I want to make here.
Looking for a hip multimedia management company that can manage you, your service, product, or your next multimedia project? Let East New York Management take you, your service, or your product to the next level. At East New York Management, we can produce and post-produce your project into a sleek finished product. We write scripts, slow-mo, blurs, and spots that are tight, hot, and funky. Liners that flow smoothly with wit as well as with verb. We also manage talent, produce, and post-produce shows that are on the cutting edge, reflecting the undeniable influence of hip-hop on popular culture. The most important thing that we can bring to your product is energy, enthusiasm, and a love for the creative process. Look for us on the World Wide Web at www.eastnewyorkmanagement.net. Call us at 347-846-8447 or email us at contact@eastnewyorkmanagement.net. Do not waste another minute with whack, boring, and uncreative multimedia and talent management companies. Bring your talent or project to East New York Management. Let East New York Management take you, your service, or your product to the next level.
Unabashedly Pan-African, you're tuned into the Marketing Pulpit International New York District. Yours truly, Dennis Shipman. It's cloudy, 39 degrees here on Monday, February 27th, 2017. And I was reading, or I'm starting to read, The Tears We Cannot Stop by Michael Eric Dyson. He touches on a lot of points that I was just making prior to the break about how in our community, man, you know, we are just, it's astounding how some of us act. But, you know, it's basically, it's not a homily to, you know, it's basically, and not even an appeal, it's just, you know, he calls it a sermon. Let's call it what he calls it. That's how he characterizes it. Tears We Cannot Stop, a Sermon to White America by Michael Eric Dyson. And I'm going to get into it. And if it's what it appears to be by all objective representations, or reviews rather, I'm going to add it to my library. But the point I was trying to make is that, you know, at some rudimentary level, I think that the African-American community would benefit if we could speak in one voice, and we do not. You have a lot of sexism still in our community. I don't know why. I've had a lot of women bosses. Some were great and others were not so much so. But that, you know, their, you know, competence or lack thereof, you know, mirrors that in the male population. I had a lot of, you know, good male bosses and a lot of bad male bosses and everything in between, you know. So I don't think it's either good, bad, or anything that's reflective of females. And, you know, certainly, you know, when we get into this, especially in the African-American community, we have to be very, very careful, man. I have a lot of bones to pick with some sisters, but I don't use that as extrapolated, broad brush, you know, all sisters, man, because, you know, more sisters help me than anybody else in my life. That's a fact. And I would be sitting here lying between my teeth if I said more brothers help me or more white people help me or white men or white women. No, it's been the sisters that have picked Dennis Shipman up. And I'm always going to applaud them because it is salt of the earth. And anybody that doesn't, and this is the problem that we have in our community, you know, white men celebrate their women. They really do. Now, everybody knows for a fact that Melania Trump is nothing more than a high-class call girl. That's a fact. That's why she doesn't live in the White House. No one wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to touch it because she just sued a major news outlet in London for publishing this stuff, but they couldn't get anybody because Trump probably paid them off and threatened everybody to substantiate this allegation. But the fact of the matter is, there's a lot where there's smoke, there's fire, and he used to frequent this club in Manhattan that's very exclusive. There's no signage on the door, anything like this. See, you have to know where you're going to get there, and it's also frequented by, you know, you know, women that are looking for, you know, gold diggers. Let's call them what they are, gold diggers and whores. And Melania Trump was either one or the other. That's a fact. And the fact that Trump married her, you know, only illustrates his own boorishness, for lack of better words. So the fact I'm trying to make there is that despite that, everybody, poor Melania, this, that, the other, you know, but we forget about the fact that she supported this guy when he was making all these anti-immigrant statements and condemning, you know, immigrants. Many of them are very hardworking. There's some that are bad people. They really are. You know, I had a couple. I don't know whether they were documented or undocumented. I don't ask. You know, if I'm, you know, and we all deal with the underground economy to some degree or the other. You know, it's not something that we don't do. And if people say, I don't deal with that, that's not true. You know, you deal with it one way or the other. You know, I had some guys doing some work at one of my properties, and, you know, a guy was, I caught a guy stealing, you know. And then another guy, you know, he came in and, you know, started arguing with me, you know, about what I should be wanting and what I should be doing. I said, wait a minute, this is last time I thought about it, I pick you up and I'm paying you. I think I'm the boss. You know, it was really outrageous. So, I was trying to get rid of him, wind up just keeping him for the day and then letting him go. But the point that I'm trying to make is that you can't broad brush, you know, a group of people, and we ought to have some fundamental, I don't don't know how to say it. Something, you know, that we all university, and I'm talking about African-Americans, blacks, Negroes, however you want to call it, color, whatever, I don't care, Afro-American, you know, just don't call me late for dinner. But the point that I'm trying to make is that, you know, we should have something universal that we agree about in our community. You know, like one time, when I was growing up, and maybe I'm Asian, or maybe I'm not, I don't know, you know. But, you know, my parents, you know, weren't highly educated. You know, my biological, my first parents, you know, I know both sets. They weren't highly educated folks. You know, my foster parents, you know, they barely made it out of elementary school, what we would call middle school a day. I think my father had an eighth grade education, and my mother had something a little less than that. You know, they went to work early. You know, this is back in the 40s and things like that. You know, the economy was doing relatively good. But, you know, for black folks, it was still a rough time then. And my biological mother and father did a little better. They were a little younger than my foster family, you know, and my biological mother was a practical nurse, and she worked her way into that position, you know, which is not, you know, very highly skilled, but it's still a skill. And my biological father, you know, I think he barely made it out of high school and became a supervisor for a local municipality, you know, working in Parks and Recreation Department. So they were both solidly middle class, but not well educated. But we, you know, what we always valued in our children, beside a work ethic, you know, which is something that I believe that most black folks ascribe, is that education as instrument of upward mobility. Really, we've always felt, and that's why we were pushed to go to college. And I think that's a bad, not a bad thing, but I think that we're in doing so. Because I talk to a lot, you know, as a college instructor, you know, I talk to a lot of kids that are clearly not college material. And I, you know, I was thinking, and I've been thinking about it long and hard, and it's something that I'm trying to implement in a program that I've developed in, you know, in a neighborhood that's underserved, you know, and that, you know, I honestly, you know, because, you know, the first thing you ask a kid what they want to do, and a lot of times they don't know. And there's a program out, it's a voc ed assessment, and what it does is it, you know, you just answer the questions. If you answer these questions honestly, it's called SIGI 2 now, and I'm sure they have another version out. What it does is it was developed by industrial psychologists. And it's based on the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery. And that's what it is, a Vocational Aptitude Battery. And what it does is it determines what you're going to be good at, but, you know, all your skill sets and your competencies and, you know, what you want to do with your life. They design questions to cull out all this data. And then they come back with, you know, like 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 jobs that you'd be good at. I took this test when I was undergraduate. I worked every single job that was on that list. Listen, we're going to talk more about this next week right here on the Marketing Pulpit International. Like I said, give the rest of our hosts on the Marketing Pulpit a listen. 10:30 every day, Monday through Friday, and I believe on Saturday. Don't forget, and have a great week.
Welcome. Yo, what's up, world? We are the good people. We invite you to join us on this musical journey through space and time and the music of my mind. We're out to change the world one song at a time, yo. Come along for the ride.
when all you hear, autopilot ain't no need to steer. Just give in to music and its magical way. So prepare for this convergence is underway. Yeah. This tender surrender, where your body is the epicenter. The luminous colors surround you. The beat is exploding through the ground. You give in to the music in this magical way. Then you activate to automate, and the energy begins to circulate. Let this